On Monday, we did sleepers. Today, our favorite breakouts for the 2017 season. That's an early look, subject to change for our breakouts. I'm Adam Azer. Heath Cummings, what up?
What is going on?
Chris Towers, hey. Bring the energy. Bring it.
Hi. Hello.
Hi, Adam. We'll take what we can get.
Really nice sweater from Chris J. Sweater
it is. It's a nice
A+.
Sweater.
What is
Are
it?
Are you going to tell them what I'm wearing?
Hold on. Is it 80 degrees down there and he's wearing a sweater?
Oh, yeah.
No, it's been pretty chilly this week, actually. You got down in the 50s.
I think it was 77 when I left for lunch today.
Oh, yeah. Sweater weather for sure. Scott White, what are you wearing?
Yeah.
What are you wearing, Scott White?
I'm wearing a Terrence Mathis Falcons jersey that you could describe as a throwback, except I have actually owned it since it was a current jersey. I've been wearing this jersey off and on since middle school.
This is the second shirt that Scott has worn into the office that he's had since at least his freshman year of high school that he still wears today.
Hey.
Yeah,
that's
amazing because I definitely could not fit into anything from high school. There's not a single piece of clothing that I own.
Well,
it still fit me.
I think it's worth noting that jerseys aren't supposed to fit the way this one's fitting me. It's kind of like a tight fitting t-shirt in how it fits.
If you didn't have the white t-shirt under it, you'd kind of be dressed like a hipster.
But then he wouldn't be such a dead.
Yeah, like that's kind of like a tight fitting jersey if you just took the undershirt
off.
I'm
going to step in and steer us back to fantasy baseball here.
Oh, come on.
We're going to have some fun today, don't worry. fantasybaseball@cbsi.com is our email address. fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. You got to put something baseball podcast or something about your question, something that I know that it's a baseball email and not a football email. Please send us your emails. Let's just do one. Your favorite early breakout. Then we'll talk about the news and notes, including Logan Forsythe going to the Dodgers for Jose De Leon. Albert Pujols not a lock to be ready for opening day. That's mostly it. Jay Bruce, right field for the Mets. But let's do one early breakout, and let's start with my man, Chris Towers. Chris, give me your favorite 2017 breakout.
I'm going to go with Lance McCullers. I love Lance McCullers. I think he is an ace in the making. I love the way he pitches, the approach he has an unbelievable whiff rate on his curveball, which makes him a pretty special pitcher. And everything he showed last season, I think there's an ace in there if he just improves the control a little bit. You know, almost 12 strikeouts per nine. We talked about Robbie Ray the other day. Lance McCullers' strikeout rate was just as good. He just needs to improve the control a little bit and keep that 57% ground ball rate, and you're talking about a potential Cy Young candidate.
I like Lance McCullers, too. He's in my breakouts column. I don't know that the strikeout rate he had last year and the walk rate he had last year can coexist, because it was both, I feel like, were the result of him using his curveball a ridiculously high amount.
Yes.
He threw it more often than his fastball.
Almost 50% of the time.
And it led to a lot of strikeouts. It probably led to a lot of walks. I think it's partly what you're saying. It's going to be finding the right balance between the two, because as a rookie, he issued 3.1 walks per nine innings, which isn't great, but it isn't going to be what prevents somebody from becoming an ace either. So
he is also in my breakouts column.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah. All three of us. And I actually wrote.
Stay away. Do not draft Lance McCullers.
Clearly.
You know, you mentioned the Cy Young thing. I actually wrote in that column, Lance McCullers, Lance McCullers is a Cy Young candidate.
He's 206 innings into his major league career. He's got a 3.16 FIP, a 3.22 ERA, and a 3.32 xFIP. That is the profile of a Cy Young candidate.
Okay, I guess we like Lance McCullers quite a bit. Moving on, Heath Cummings, your favorite breakout.
So you said my favorite breakout, not my best breakout pick, right? Like the one that I love deep in my heart.
This is what I'm going to say. America is listening right now. You tell them whatever you feel you need to tell America.
But I get to talk about the rest of the breakouts later.
Heath, just sing the song that's in your heart.
Yeah.
Okay. I will say Jorge is still there.
Okay. Well, that makes sense, doesn't it?
Of course you will. Of course you will.
I think Jorge Soler checks all the boxes of the out of nowhere and fantasy purposes breakout campaign. He's got the pedigree. He's got the change of scenery. He's got that one skill that could be game changing.
He has a KC on his hat.
He plays for the Royals. I mean, All the boxes. Check, 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 check.
I mean, if they gave up Wade Davis for him, Wade Davis is the reason they won a World Series 2 years ago.
It's true.
He's going to a great ballpark to have his power breakout, right?
Jorge Soler has the type of power, as many said about Chris Davis last year, that no ballpark is going to hold him.
So, Jorge Soler is, at probably until he reaches 30 or so, he is perennially, perennially a breakout candidate. But I don't know what would specifically inspire me to target him this year, other than the fact that I guess he'll play more.
He's going to play every day.
Yeah.
There we go.
He's going to break out at some point. So you're just going to have to keep drafting him until he does, right? And hopefully he'll be better than Marcell Ozuna, but there's not a ton of evidence to suggest that he will be.
I mean, he's been better already.
No.
Marcell Ozuna has some skills too. But he doesn't have the one thing, that one thing that he could. Jorge Soler could be one of the best power hitters in the American League.
History, yeah. Okay.
History.
Yeah. All right.
World
right.
History for sure.
Outfielder league.
Jorge Soler is an obvious breakout candidate. I don't want to poo-poo that much. But the per 162 game numbers between him and Marcell Ozuna are remarkably similar. 21 home runs per 162 for Soler, 19 for Ozuna. Mid-700s OPS. They're kind of the same guy.
But Soler hasn't even broken out yet. And Ozuna has? Maybe?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know either.
How old is Ozuna?
He's a year and a half older.
See?
America just tuned
out. And Ozuna broke out last year. Rewind a year and a half. Kind of. Here comes Soler.
Okay,
He is 1 year older.
Scott White. Make America happy.
All right, I'm going with James Bill Paxton.
Mm.
A guy you liked a lot last year, right, Adam?
Yes.
Well, now
And I think the year before, too.
And the reason I like him is because he's a different pitcher. It started last year after he didn't secure a rotation spot in spring training. He changed his delivery, made it more like a three-quarters delivery instead of being so overhand, came up, and was throwing 100 miles per hour. And for the most part was pitching well. His walk rate was elite and he was throwing 100 miles per hour. So we kept thinking, okay, why is he not better than this? It's pretty good, but he needs to get better. And then late in the season, his last few starts, he reincorporated the curveball into his arsenal. It was his best pitch coming up through the minors, what made him a prospect in the first place. And it turned out to be his best pitch last year too. His whiff rate, that's what he got the most on. And he started to get high strikeout totals with those low walk totals. In terms of velocity, in terms of walk rate, compared to what I think the strikeout upside can be, I think James Paxton is shaping up to be a left-handed Noah Syndergaard. He just needed to figure out how to throw that curveball with the new delivery, and that happened late last year. So I love him. I'm going to try and draft him in round 12 of every league I'm in.
Cool.
Mark it and, down. Take him in the 11th.
Yeah.
I feel
if you're drafting with me, you'll have to.
Strongly agree that he's a breakout candidate. And I also think, you know, we're all very high on Danny Duffy. There's a chance James Paxton's a better version of Danny Duffy next year. The peripherals are all better, with the exception of the strikeout rate, but the FIP, the XFIP, Sierra's pretty much the same, but he's got a... There are reasons to believe James Paxton can be better out of discount.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. I think that the thing that Paxton has to do is the thing that Duffy, through the first couple of years of his career, could never do, and that was pitch late into games on a even semi-regular basis. And he averaged about six innings
right
per start last year.
Yeah.
And cutting
his walk rate down to 1.8 per nine should
help
a lot with that.
Yeah. Now
that's like a Josh Tomlin walk rate.
The last 11 starts of the season for Paxton, he went 4-3 with a 3.19 ERA. 9 walks, 71 strikeouts, and 67 and two-thirds. And a little inconsistent, though. In those 11 starts, Paxton had 5 starts of 7 or more innings and 2 or fewer earned runs. So 5 pretty dominant starts. He also had 5 starts of 5 or fewer innings and 3 or more earned runs. So I remember last year doing the dance with James Paxton. I think he had a start at Toronto that was just absolutely lights out. And I remember seeing Ghostbusters 2 in theaters that night. Or no, Ghostbusters 3, whatever it is, the new Ghostbusters. And checking my phone seeing the score, looking at James Paxton, and telling Jamie Eisenberg, who I shared a team with, pick up James Paxton right now. I was so pumped to get him on my team, but he would kind of yo-yo, kind of seesaw back and forth. But, you know, he's putting it together. Hopefully get a little more consistent this year, and you got to love the ratios and the lack of home runs. He barely gives up any home runs, which is nice.
You mentioned last 11 starts there. The last six of those starts is when he brought back the curveball.
Okay. Good stuff. We got a lot of news and notes for you. We also have something weird going on with Scott, putting GIFs in his stories.
It's terrible.
What's happening?
I am sad.
It's a tough topic to discuss.
You were
right
one
now.
Letter off, Scott. You were one letter off.
What?
You said, I am sad. You were close.
Okay.
Scott is dad.
Oh, yeah, I'm dad?
Yeah. Well, he became a dad.
Scott? So what happened?
I think this was a gift to all of your readers.
I think so,
I say
too.
Gift?
You should say gift because apparently it's pronounced Jeff. But yeah, no, my Sleepers, Breakouts, and Busts articles this year, they're like 4,000 words long each. They need something in there to break it up. We have the capability of putting GIFs in our articles now. GIFs are very popular on the internet.
I made
a painstaking effort to find GIFs that really aligned with what I was saying. They weren't forced in there. And so I put about 5 or 6 GIFs in each of those articles. Now, right now, my Breakouts article has 10 comments on them. 3 of them are complaining that there are GIFs in the article. I don't know why the people who read my articles are the only people on the internet who apparently dislike GIFs.
Scott,
I didn't see how adding them could detract from the story at all.
Can I give one bit of advice?
What?
Never read the comments.
Well,
nothing good has ever happened in the comments of anything.
No. These comments, though, like, if it says these GIFs are stupid, you're not funny. I expect that kind of comment. I get that.
But these,
deeper. Hey, I really like your writing. I enjoyed this article.
Don't
use the GIFs.
I really respected you before you debased yourself.
That's kind of the tone they're taking. Exactly.
I'm not mad.
Body, we had a Body Python GIF.
Adam, do you feel like when you read an article and there are GIFs in there that are, you know, meant to enhance? Do they actually enhance it for you? Do they give you a little chuckle or anything? Or
okay,
are you just like, oh,
you are asking the wrong person, because I have not and never have really been a huge fan of the GIF craze. But I understand why you're doing it, because I'm not like most people. Most people on Twitter love that stuff. So
GIFs are great.
I don't get it.
If I just put the GIF of the Toronto Raptors inflatable mascot tripping while roller skating in every article I do, I would.
The thing I love the most, well, there's several things. I mean, one of them is just how upset you are by people. But the fact that you wrote 4,000 words and thought, this needs something else. This isn't quite enough.
There are a lot of GIFs.
It was just 4,000 words of straight text, right? That would not compel people to keep scrolling.
A 48-ounce porterhouse and then just added some cheese whiz on
it. You know what? Finding these GIFs and making them work, that was extra work. That was extra time, extra effort. If it's not appreciated, I'm not going to put GIFs in
Scott,
articles.
I think you maybe have a little too many. I think maybe two-thirds. I'm just saying, it's my audit. There's a lot. There are a lot in there. But they're funny. Like, they're funny. Kristen Wiig doing that face, that is funny.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I'm sorry. All right.
I tried to be fun.
We appreciate that.
Fantasy baseball fun again.
Try to work harder than Scott White. It's not possible. This guy is 100% dedicated to fantasy baseball. He wanted you to have a little fun out there. And I think, you know, most people that like it don't comment. Keep that in mind.
Let's get down to brass tacks. Nobody who likes anything ever says so on the internet.
Right. Yeah, it's only the detractors that comment. So don't let them get you.
I started a Twitter poll on this subject just to kind of test that idea. And it was simple. Does weaving GIFs into an article enhance the article or detract from the article? 178 votes in, 53-47 say enhance. So enhance is winning, but it's like a 50-50 split.
All right. We need more sample size there. Let's go to the news and notes. The Dodgers acquiring Logan Forsythe from the Rays for big-time minor league pitching prospect who did make his debut last year and It did not go well, but it was only a few starts. Jose De Leon, 6.35 ERA for De Leon in 17 innings. He had great numbers in the PCL. He had a 2.61 ERA with 20 walks to 111 strikeouts in an 86 and a third. He had a .94 whip. So obviously a nice prospect here. They give up Logan Forsythe. Forsythe's best season, 2015, which kind of came out of nowhere. He was the number 10 second baseman in fantasy in both points and roto. He didn't have a great year, but it was nice. 281, 17 home runs, 9 steals. What do you guys think? Value up, down, or the same for Logan Forsythe?
The value could go up for Forsythe. This trade just drove me crazy, and I am absolutely team trade prospects to win now guy. But I think there's two possibilities. Either Jose De Leon was overrated as a prospect, or the Dodgers are dumb.
Well, look, we know the Dodgers were the worst team against lefties last year. So, and Forsythe's reputation, even when he wasn't,
he can kill lefties.
Yeah. So that's what they needed. And he gets
don't give up what we think Jose De Leon's going to be for that.
And it is,
like, if they want to be better against lefties, just play Enrique Hernandez more.
In fairness, they tried to give up Jose De Leon for Brian Dozier, that they could never make that work. I agree that, you know, this is settling a little too much, although Forsythe is probably an even better real-life player than fantasy player, looking at his WAR the last couple years. But I think both players' fantasy stock goes up here. Forsythe going to a better lineup, a little bit better park. De Leon's... Just looking at his minor league numbers, the one thing that could burn him in the majors is how many home runs he gives up in Tampa Bay. AL East, some of the road games, that might still be an issue. But Tampa Bay is a great park for pitchers with fly ball tendencies. So, and now Matt Andrees is the only one standing in De Leon's way of claiming a rotation spot. So I expect to see him sooner than later.
Okay.
And I would just point out, De Leon, I think his upside could be like peak James Shields, which is a very good pitcher. You know, the fastball changeup combo is what he's going to rely on. It's going to make him susceptible to home runs, but if they're mostly solo home runs, I think it's
Do you not feel like he has better strikeout potential than that? Because he's been a guy who's led all the minor leagues in strikeouts per nine.
James Shields struck out quite a few batters in his early days.
He didn't strike out as many as De Leon would be expected to now, but relative to the league back then, I think his strikeout total maybe were more similar.
Yeah, I think he could be a strikeout or more per inning guy, but you don't expect the 13 per nine that he's been at the last couple of years to sustain either.
Right.
Okay. We've got... Oh, well, let me throw out Forsythe comparisons. Forsythe or Jonathan Scope?
I'll take Forsythe. I was before the trade, too.
I'll take Scope and Roto, I think.
Yeah, it depends on the format, but I like Scope's power in Roto.
Heath looks up his rankings, and...
I'm taking Scope and points, too.
Okay, Scope it is. Devin Travis or Logan Forsythe?
Travis, easily.
Travis by one spot.
Oh.
I have... Travis a little behind.
Ooh. All right, thought you were the Travis guy.
Me too.
Maybe I am. Maybe I need to be.
Well, we go on to the Cubs signing Brett Anderson. Anyone care?
Mike Montgomery Insurance.
Okay.
I think.
Albert Pujols not a lock to be ready for opening day after having December surgery for plantar fasciitis in his foot. I hate pronouncing that. Pujols, let me tell you where he has finished among first basemen in the last three seasons. He was number 2 in points, number 3 in roto 3 seasons ago, number 6 in points, number 8 in roto 2 seasons ago, and number 11 in points, number 10 in roto last year. I'm going to say outside the top 12 this year, number 14 first baseman, out of the blue prediction. If this guy's going to miss spring training and get off he already is streaky. Like, I'm not interested. Not interested in Albert Pujols. You can have him. I'll take him late in a roto league. That's it.
I've got him 13th.
I've got him 14th. Last year was pretty fluky.
He's
a bust.
Feels a little Victor Martinez 2 years ago to me. Like, coming into the season, you're an old guy coming into the season hurt. Doesn't portend well. I might have to move him down a little.
Yeah, I'll move him down in light of this news. I probably was the most willing to draft him in the round 9 range we were maybe seeing him go before this news broke. I mean, if he's sliding to round 13, 14, I don't know how you could pass him up at that point.
Well,
especially in points leagues, he strikes out so infrequently.
But you'd have
to
take
a little last year too, didn't it?
You'd have to have no first baseman at that point.
You'd be a utility.
I wouldn't really want him in my utility, but fine. That's fair. It's fair. Yeah, he does not strike out a lot. That is true.
Do you expect, like, I'd expect him to outperform. I'm still expecting him to outperform Morales, who I like, Victor Martinez. Like, I would take him in utility. Sure. He's better than the DH only types out there.
Yeah.
And somebody's taking them to start at DH.
I usually look for outfielders for utility. Just kind of.
I would rather have I did draft Morales, I think, in our last draft, but I'd rather have somebody that I can move somewhere else and play if I need to. Yeah.
Hey, Mr. Heath, did you?
Yeah.
Oh, you lied to us. Boy, did you lie to us on Monday. You owe us all, you owe America an apology right now. Cause I said, we were talking about some sleepers. I said, you know, these guys might not be 12 team mixed league guys. And you said, I am drafting Travis Shaw today. And you, sir, did not draft Travis Shaw.
There was, there were a lot of players.
Can you
left.
Just apologize?
Yeah, right? What is and this?
No chance. there were a lot of players left in my top 200 at the end of that draft. It was, and I think that we all kind of had that experience.
There were still players left over who I would like to have drafted, but that's kind of the expectation. That's why it's such
that's
a high
head-to-head league.
Right. That's why it's such a high threshold.
I'm used to drafting, I guess, with a little more advanced crowd where Travis Shaw would be a last round pick.
Okay.
Oh, come on.
Giancarlo Stanton will play in the World Baseball Classic. Masahiro Tanaka will not. San Francisco.
Their opportunity for Stanton to get hurt.
Yeah, I guess. San Francisco was close to signing Korean infielder Jaegyun Wang. Sorry about that. Butchered that. Backup infielder.
He's the bat flip guy, right?
I mean, I feel like everybody in the KBO is the bat flip guy at this point.
Like, no, I have no idea if he's the bat flip guy or not.
He's the bat flip guy.
There's lots of bat flips.
He is Eduardo Nunez insurance, and there's a possibility he could just be better than Nunez.
I struggle so much with the Korean Baseball League guys the Korean Baseball Organization guys because I don't know what happened there over the last 3 or 4 seasons. The offensive explosion is ridiculous, and his numbers have taken a big jump as a result.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So is he going to get drafted in a roto league? This is Jaegyun Wang.
Not a mixed league, not unless he goes crazy this spring or something. I see him as more a nice $5-6 gamble in an NL only league.
He is the bat flip guy, and it sounds like he's also said that he will lose the bat flip when he comes to America.
Just no. Better.
Young Ho Park was a bat flip guy too. His bat flips were epic.
Fun police are going to come get him.
Jay Bruce.
Fun police who don't like GIFs.
Jay Bruce will start the season as the Mets' everyday right fielder, according to the New York Post. But you know what? They are trying to trade him, so we'll have to keep an eye on a fluid situation. That would potentially leave Michael Conforto without a job. We'll see what happens there. But I'd rather talk about breakouts and save some time for some emails. fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Let's go back to the breakouts. And we're going to snake draft it here. Heath has the first pick. You are allowed to talk about any of your breakouts, or at least any of the 4 that you told me you might talk about today. You already talked about Jorge Soler, crossing him off the list. Going to cross off Lance McCullers for Chris. Going to cross off James Paxton for Scott. Heath, you are on the clock with your first breakout pick.
I will start with Carlos Rodon, who should be Adam Azer's favorite breakout because he already broke out in the second half of 2016. All he has to do is carry that over to 2017.
You are really mislabeling my second half stats. I don't even know that I was that guy. I throw out a lot of stats for context here, you know, not because I fully believe in them. But yes, in his last 11 starts, he had a 3.11 ERA, 20 walks, 70 strikeouts, 6 home runs allowed in 66 and 2/3.
In the second half, he had struck out 9.5 batters per 9 innings with a walk per 9 below 3. Now, I'm not the second half guy, except when it comes to young, talented players that we haven't seen reach their potential yet. Then I'm more likely to buy into it. Thankfully, Chris, who's even more skeptical than I am, when we were talking about Rodon, went out and looked up why was Rodon different in the second half. And it's because he started throwing his changeup more and having more success with his changeup, which allows him to get right-handed hitters out, Carlos Rodon is another one of these young pitchers that could very, very easily make the jump into the top 20.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's so good against lefties that he really just has to be okay against righties to be a very good pitcher. He had a 609 OPS allowed to lefties last season, 799 to righties. If he can just be an average pitcher against righties, he's got, you know, big potential.
Changeup should help with his control issues too, which have been, I feel like, the main thing holding him back. That 11 start stretch where he had the 3.11 ERA, 2.7 walks per nine, which is not even really bad anymore.
Yeah.
So
started throwing the changeup about 20% of the time to righties.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm on board with him as a breakout too. Like McCullers, all three of the pitchers we mentioned so far, McCullers, Paxton, and Rodon are in my breakouts column.
Yeah, all right, but here's just one red flag, because we keep talking about these 11 starts for Carlos Rodon, 3.11 ERA, over a strikeout per inning, good control, good enough. He still averaged 17 pitches per inning in those starts, and he pitched more than six innings three times in 11 starts. So I'm not going to condemn him and say that he can't, but he's just still a pretty inefficient pitcher. And like Scott, for example, I know you like innings a lot. He has not shown us... A lot of the guys we're going to talk about haven't shown us that yet. Paxton hasn't shown us that yet. Rodon hasn't shown us that yet. McCullers hasn't really shown us that yet. We're hoping that they can, but I am a little worried about Rodon. He's just been so inefficient as a pitcher in that regard.
That's fair. I mean, I don't know where he went in our draft Monday. I could probably look that up.
I got it, my friend. He went in the 10th round to Lance.
And I did just look this up. Right-handed hitters against Rodon in the second half last year had a 696 OPS with a 302 WOBA. If he's able to do that to righties this year,
These are good. These are really talented pitchers. There are a lot of mid to late round pitchers that are talented.
What was the WOBA?
302.
And 10th round is probably the earliest of that class of pitchers you're referring to, Adam. I don't think there's anything wrong with drafting Rodon there if he's one of your favorites. I do prefer Paxton over him, and I think Paxton went in round 12. So that was just a draft where I wasn't going to get Rodon, and I'm okay with that too because of the downside you mentioned.
And I'll give you some other pitchers that went in that. Actually, round 10 is a pretty interesting pitcher round. Started with McCullers to Chris with the first pick of round 10. And then I took Steven Matz after that, and then Felix Hernandez, Marco Estrada, John Lackey went in that round, Carlos Rodon. So you have a mixture of young McCullers, Matz, Rodon, young unproven guys. And then you've got Lackey, Felix Hernandez, and Estrada, who are all very different veterans. And then you get Roark after that. There are so many cases to be made for and against all these pitchers. It's, I guess, sort of figuring out which ones to target in that range could be the difference.
I don't really get the argument for taking Estrada or Lackey in that range with those guys.
Lackey was so good last year, though.
Yeah, Lackey's got a phenomenal defense behind him, although it's probably, you have to assume it'll be worse this year just by default.
And offense. And he's an efficient pitcher who goes deep into games. I mean,
yeah.
I would, if Lackey stays healthy, and he didn't last year, he got hurt late in the year, but that's been a rarity for him. If he stays healthy, I'd put the over-under at something like 13, 14 wins.
Yeah. All right, guys. Problem. So we'll talk more about those guys. You know, throughout the offseason. Let's go to Chris. Chris, you're on the clock with the second pick of the breakout draft.
I'm going to go with Miguel Sano. This is one that's really just about betting on talent. If you want to talk about someone like Jorge Soler being a breakout candidate every year until it happens or until he turns 30, Miguel Sano, I think, has the potential to be one of the handful of best hitters in baseball. I think he has Giancarlo Stanton-type potential. The strikeout rate last year, 36%, is way too high, but he's someone that, if anything, suffers from being too disciplined. He just doesn't swing very often. I think he had a 41% swing rate last year, and opposing pitchers were willing to just kind of attack him in the zone because he wasn't swinging. If that changes, he's going to make them pay for attacking the zone, and I think you're looking at someone who could have a, you know, pretty massive 38 to 40 homer type of season.
Okay, well, look, you don't have to do too much math to justify that because in 2015, Sano played 80 games. So let's just take those 80 games and multiply everything by two and give him 160 games. He would have batted 269 with 36 home runs and 104 RBIs, plus 92 runs, only two steals, 106 walks, which is tremendous, but 238 Ks. Those would have been his full season numbers.
Yep.
In the half,
there's a lot of fault in that method.
Well, yeah, but
because he's not
sure.
I mean, there is, but this is what you were saying about Michael Franco going into last year, Heath. We were just saying, like, this is what he did in 80 games. Let's just, you know.
No, I right. The difference with Sano, because that's the 160 is part of that. But the other part of it is, because it was only 80 games, he was able to have a 396 BABIP that year. He's going to have to strike out a lot less to ever hit close to 270 again.
Yes, but I would look at him and say, the same way Chris Bryant is, the same way Giancarlo Stanton is, he's going to be a high BABIP guy. Whether that's 330, 340, remains to be seen. He's at 354 over the course of his two seasons. He hits the ball exceptionally hard when he does manage to make contact with it. And I think Chris Bryant's instructive. He went from about a 29-30% strikeout rate to 22%. Miguel Sano doesn't have to get to 22% to be that good. If he can get to the 26, 27, 28% range that Giancarlo Stanton's been in, I think the upside there is 280, 35, 40 home runs, however many RBI you can get playing in the Twins lineup while being that good.
And he may be his own worst enemy in that regard, because there were some questions raised last year about his work ethic. The Twins were debating sending him down for a while. And his conditioning, his willingness to improve as a defender, they're going to try him at third base again. It just seems like he's not all in yet.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what it'll take for him to get there.
And I also think that's a concern right up until it stops being a concern.
Yeah.
You know, man, you could say the same thing about all those things with Manny Ramirez, and it wasn't really a concern. You know?
No, but he...
And he's not necessarily Manny Ramirez.
He was... Ramirez was kind of a space case, I guess, but he was also known for his workout.
Yeah, yeah. Manny Ramirez cared. He just was kind of a weirdo who, you know, went to the bathroom in the outfield wall, but he put a lot of work in. Alright, that's Miguel Sano, who certainly has a ton of power. Scott, you've got back to back, you got the swing picks here for your breakouts.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to dip into that upside pitcher group again, with Sean Manaea, who I'm not convinced hasn't already broken out. But I got him, I believe, in round 13 of that head-to-head mock draft. So after Rodon, after James Paxton. This is what Sean Manaea did in his last 14 appearances, 13 of them starts. 244 ERA, 0.99 whip. That same 1.8 walk-to-strikeout ratio that I was raving about for Paxton. 8 strikeouts per 9 innings, which isn't bad. It's not quite Carlos Rodon's 9.5, but it's not bad on its face. And I think maybe that's a stat that has the potential to improve, because in terms of just his pure whiff percentage, how many swings and misses Manaea got, that was on the same level of Robbie Ray, who was among the very best in strikeout rate last year. So Manaea has the changeup to neutralize right-handed hitters. He has the control that we're also hoping to see from Rodon. And he at least has the upside to dominate, I think, like Rodon has. So I think he's actually a half step to a full step ahead of Rodon in terms of development, and just doesn't get quite the same attention for whatever reason. I don't know, playing for the A's maybe. But that also helps because it's such
O.co.
a big park.
Yeah.
Okay.
I love him.
All right. Who's your next pick, Scott?
My next pick.
Now,
will be
can you go with Addison Russell? Because I'm going to tell you, I'm sitting there in the draft on Monday, and Russell's on the board pretty late. He went in the 13th round with the 8th pick of the 13th round to Jamie Eisenberg. And I just kept thinking, like, I don't want to give up on Addison Russell. I think he could be really nice value, but I didn't end up taking him. And you have him as a breakout. It's just interesting. He just hasn't done anything yet. But tell me why this year might be different for Addison Russell.
It's a weird situation, I agree. I haven't actually brought myself to draft Addison Russell yet either, even though I think it's one of the most clear-cut arguments for any of my breakout candidates. I think part of the problem is I also like Dansby Swanson, and he's available much later than Russell, And then Aledmys Diaz, he's also on my breakouts list. He's just so undervalued. And you can get him just a couple rounds before Russell most of the time. So I don't find myself drafting Russell that often. But there's a good chance he has this a season very much like the one Xander Bogaerts put together last year, because we already saw him take a big step forward in terms of home run total last year, eclipsed 20. But his batting average fell a few points. It was at 238, I think. The batting average doesn't make any sense at all to me, though, because his line drive rate was up last year. His fly ball rate was down. Both of those should help batting average. Not surprisingly, his BABIP was down like 50 points from 2 years ago. It was in the 270 range.
But he only hit 242 2 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
And he hit 238 last year, Addison Russell.
Right. No, I'm not saying he didn't deserve to hit 242 2 years ago. I'm saying...
Okay.
His batted ball tendencies should have drastically improved his batting average. And they didn't. Sorry, I missed the biggest one of all. His strikeout rate cut way down. So line drives up, fly balls down, strikeouts way down, yet somehow his batting average fell. That shouldn't have happened. I think if you combine the correction there with the improved power he showed, you end up with something like Xander Bogaerts.
You know what the strangest thing is with him?
What?
He should be an elite batter against lefties. He had an 801 OPS against them, 9 home runs and 162 plate appearances. But he only hit 223 despite a pretty healthy strikeout rate and a pretty good walk rate, because he had a 239 BABIP. He's got a 227 BABIP against lefties in his career. If that turns around, that might be all you need.
Yeah,
that could just be a little bit of BABIP, but, you know, if that BABIP against lefties goes up to 300, all of a sudden you might be looking at the Addison Russell that we hoped for when he got traded for, was it John Lester?
No, it was Jeff Samardzija and Jason Hamill went from the Cubs to the A's during their last great playoff push. Okay. And then the Cubs went.
Would have been better
if they
traded him for John Lester.
Yeah, it would have been. Oh, well.
Well, Russell was the number 13 shortstop in points leagues last year, number 17 in Roto, and he is only 23 years old. Just be aware, there were at least 25 shortstops that had more steals than Russell. 6 shortstops had more than 20 steals. One of them was Chris Owings, who nobody owned. This is a position that a lot of people will look to for steals. So just if you're in a categories league and you have Russell, you might want to get those steals somewhere else. Chris, back on the clock for your third breakout of the day.
And this is going to be a controversial one. This is someone that we've actually had some discussions about in the office in recent days, and that's Kenta Maeda. I feel like he gets kind of tagged with the boring, no upside, he is what he is kind of tag. He is 28 years old. He does have an extensive professional career in Japan, but you know, you look at a lot of the numbers for him, not just the 9.17 strikeouts per 9, but the fact that he was top 20 among starting pitchers in swinging strike rate at 11.6%. I just think there might be room for him to improve in his second year in the majors. He's got a great offense backing him up, pretty good defense. I think Kenta Maeda has room to grow, and I don't think anybody's really taking into account the fact that there might be potential left.
I'm going to compare him to Yasmani Tomas after his first year in the major leagues. Everybody expected him to just come over as a finished product.
Yeah.
He didn't hit for any power, and we just gave up on the idea that Yasmani Tomas is going to hit for power.
And in fairness, Kenta Maeda kind of, the scouting reports hit pretty perfectly. Like the scouting reports on him were he was a mid-rotation guy, the slider was the only plus pitch, everything else graded out close to average. That's pretty much what he was.
Here's the problem with Maeda for me. The percentages, they look good, but in more than half of his starts last year,
I know where this is going.
Minimum required for a quality start.
Yep. Yeah.
The minimum.
Yeah, I know, but it's really mostly the second half. And I think you could make a case that the adjustment from pitching in Korea to pitching in the United States, it can be tough on a pitcher, and he wore down. Because he had a 2.95 ERA before the All-Star break, and then 4.25 after the All-Star break, and Maeda only 2 starts of 7 innings all season. But
well, no, They were limiting his innings all season long.
But even
but
the last 2 months of the season, he was basically throwing five innings almost every time. So
I mean,
I think
in May he only once exceeded five innings in his five starts. It was something that was going on all season.
But what about
and
April
maybe,
and June?
Maybe
he had
good
second
year from Japan, more used to the five man rotation instead of the six man rotation.
Right.
Maybe they'll turn him loose a little
and
more.
Maybe that's
something he'll never be able to break free from. You know, we've seen.
But we shouldn't assume that after his 1 year in the league.
Oh, I don't assume anything. It always boils down to what's the cost versus the potential benefit. And I feel like there's a broader assumption. I feel like people are giving Maeda more the benefit of the doubt than they are some of these other pitchers we're talking about. They're drafting him earlier because they like the ratios, and that's fine. I don't know that he'll ever get there with the innings, so
He's being drafted as the 92nd player off the board, just in front of Danny Duffy, just behind Jose Quintana.
That's pretty high. Ahead of Jose Quintana?
No, behind Jose Quintana.
Ahead of Danny Duffy?
Right, like
Danny
two
Duffy
spots.
Pitched like an ace last year. You're backing up exactly what I'm saying.
Danny Duffy had a 3.8 ERA last year, right?
I know it was kind of a bumpy finish, but for most of the time he was on fantasy rosters, he was counted on to be an ace, and Kenta Maeda never was. None of the people who owned him last year felt like they could start him every time he pitched.
Where did Kenta Maeda finish
last
year?
Not in the points league.
Please don't ask me, Heath. I don't have that in front of me. That's going to take way too long. I can tell you in points. Rota would take too long.
No, points is all I need.
All right.
I
will get that for you.
Maybe he can't get to 200 innings, but his very first inning, or very first season at 175, win 16 games. I don't see any reason to expect that to come down too much playing for the Dodgers, who are
going
to win.
If he's not going six innings, he had some good luck winning 16 games.
I think Maeda was around 30th in points leagues.
I think that's pretty close to where he's being drafted, around the 30th pitcher
probably,
off the board.
Probably, and I just think... Yes, the innings are a concern. I don't think I'm ready to write him off as a five innings per start guy.
Oh, I'm not either. It's just, is he the first pitcher I'm looking to draft once you get past the near ace Dallas Keuchel, Danny Duffy class? And for me, no, it's not. To me, that's a more glaring issue than anything.
I'm not sure I'd rather have Keuchel than him. Either.
I'd definitely not rather have Keuchel, but I think I'd rather have Duffy. So we're splitting hairs, I think, with that. But
You wouldn't rather.
If he was a top 30 pitcher with 175 innings, I'm pretty encouraged.
He was 27th in points leagues. You wouldn't rather have Dallas Keuchel when you know that. See, that's kind of like the Garrett Richards argument that we had yesterday. Who was it? It was Richards versus? Robbie Ray.
He doesn't like Dallas Keuchel. I don't think you're going to get Heath to say. I don't think you're going to win Heath over to Dallas Keuchel.
No, I'm just saying, like, Dallas Keuchel had a Cy Young season. You know,
I know. I think most of the people listening, when they hear me call Dallas Keuchel a near ace, they're not raising an eyebrow to that.
Okay. Keuchel went 80th overall yesterday or Monday in our draft, and Maeda went 101st overall. So. Let's move on. We are at Heath now. Heath, you are on the clock.
We got Scott all fired up. Let's just keep him that way. Danny Salazar.
Yeah.
Yeah. Talk about a guy that can't throw six innings. I don't really believe that. Listen, Danny Salazar came pretty close to having a breakout last year. Walks got in the way early, which was weird. Because he'd been under 3 walks per 9 every year of his career until last year, and then it ballooned. His strikeout numbers were elite. He got hurt, so that really helps the argument that there's no way Danny Salazar can ever throw 200 innings. But he threw 185 innings in 2015 on 30 starts. If he makes 33 starts, he's throwing 200 innings. What you need for Danny Salazar to be a fantasy ace is to basically just pitch like he did in 2015 for 33 starts.
Well,
he's on a better team than he was then.
3.45 ERA is not exactly an ace, but 1.13 WHIP is pretty damn good.
if you do that and throw 205 innings and strike out 215, 220 batters mm-hmm. and win 16 to 18 games, you are a fantasy ace.
All right. You know what? Let's do a fun exercise because I think you're probably right. But let's see how many – what would you call a fantasy ace, a top 12 pitcher?
12 to 15. No. I might even go deeper than that. I might go 20.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll tell you what.
Because there are a lot of ace caliber pitchers.
It wasn't 20 last year.
No, it wasn't. But how many pitchers would you say are capable of performing on the level of, I don't know.
I like to think all of them are.
David Price.
I believe in everybody.
Well, there's probably 20 pitchers who could turn into David Price season this year.
All right, let me just do this. While you guys figure that out, I'm going to look at the top 20 finishers pitcher. Hold on. And I'm going to... you'll get your turn, Mr. Towers.
I thought we were going to talk.
You said while we do that, we thought we were supposed to do something while you...
While you guys chat, I'm going to tell you what I'm doing.
So we should chat.
Yeah, but just wait for me to finish what I'm going to do, my assignment, and then you can chat. I'm going to look at the top 20 pitchers and give you the 5 highest ERAs in the top 20 last year. You guys talk amongst yourself.
You go do that.
Okay.
Chris, he's trying to.
Okay, so last season, according to PitchFX, Danny Salazar got roughly the same amount of swings on pitches inside the strike zone, right at 67%. Contact rate on pitches in the strike zone, right about the same. His rate of swings on pitches outside the strike zone was a career low 28.3%. It's possible that that explains at least some of the regression that he saw in terms of his control. It's also possible that having to rely on backup catchers so much hurt the pitch framing data in Cleveland, but that's just an assumption. I didn't Google pitch framing data.
Yeah, I think their backup... can't think of his name off the top of my head.
Chris Jimenez, right?
What was it?
Wasn't it Chris Jimenez? No?
No. The
Perez.
Well, now I need
Carlos
to find
Perez.
It.
Roberto Perez?
Roberto Perez?
Roberto Perez.
I'm just going to keep saying names.
Yeah.
I think he's a better pitch framer than Yan Gomes is.
Okay.
But, you know, Salazar, we talked about it a lot, I know. But he is so... maybe the walk rate wasn't as high early in his career, but he was an inefficient pitcher. He struggled to go 6 innings at a time. He's always struggled with home runs.
I would argue that in the first 2 years of his career, he was no more inefficient than James Paxton. Probably less.
Okay, but James Paxton, James Paxton became a different pitcher last year. So I didn't like James Paxton early in his career, and now I do because he's not James Paxton anymore. He's super James Paxton. Well, Danny Salazar is still Danny Salazar, which means he's inefficient, he's home run prone, he's small and brittle and not going to hold up over a full season, and I think you're going to get burned if you draft him as more than a number 4 or 5 pitcher.
I think if you want to believe both what Heath is saying and what Scott is saying, well, a number 4 or 5 pitcher. Wow, that's kind of extreme. But if you want
to
split
extreme. He's only drafting him as a number 3.
Dude,
I can't just say.
Look, he had a 2.
No,
he was
pitcher overall.
He was 10 and 3. Danny Salazar. Danny Salazar was 10 and 3 with a 2.22 ERA and then he got hurt. And look, there were some issues there. He had 43 walks in 93 and a third innings. There's no question.
We're waiting for the rug to come out.
Yeah, but still he's more than a number 4 pitcher. But if you want to just kind of consider everything, he's probably better in Roto than he is in points leagues, where the innings count for a lot in points leagues. So, you know, you could make that distinction. Now, you want your 5 worst ERAs in the top 20?
Yeah.
Okay, the worst was David Price, 3.99. And he was the only pitcher in the top 20 last year, starting pitcher, that had an ERA over 3.33. Chris Sale was 3.33, Hamels 3.32, Quintana 3.20, Happ 3.19. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah,
it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I'd have to go. I think we should probably look at more years, but impromptu homework assignment. All right, let's read some emails. Here's one from Sean. I'm in a dynasty startup league, and like a dummy, I waited on first base. He did address this email to me, but since I don't really know, I put this in the show so you guys could answer it. He was wondering your thoughts as a Yankees fan on Greg Bird. Is Greg Bird worth a flyer? Otherwise, I'm looking at Brad Miller, Yulieski Gurriel, or Vogelback.
I'd rather. I mean, it's a dynasty league, so Greg Bird. There's more of a future there, but just for this year, I'd rather have Brad Miller as my starting first baseman.
Probably.
I'm really starting to think that I probably need to move Greg Bird up in my rankings.
Where is he?
He's after Brad Miller. I've got Brad Miller right around the 20th first baseman, I think, and I think Bird is just a spot or two behind him.
I don't think you have to really move him. Maybe ahead of like CJ Cron.
Like, Greg Bird is a left-handed power hitter that gets to play at Yankee Stadium.
It's not always a good thing. And it's weird.
It's almost always
a
good thing.
No, it's not. It's a batting average killer. And he batted .235 at home and .292 on the road. And this is what happened to Brian McCann. They get bull happy.
I don't think he's going to have a good batting average. I agree with that. But he walks enough to where he should have a good on-base percentage. He should hit plenty of home runs.
He should. He's going to sit against lefties, though, Greg Bird, for Tyler Austin. Probably.
That's dumb.
No, I don't know that it's dumb. I mean, they like Austin. And these were his numbers granted in 42 at-bats against lefties. .238. It's actually not terrible other than the batting average. .238, that's pretty bad. .347, .405. So keep that in mind
with
Greg Bird.
No, a .750 OPS against lefties. Now it's 42 at bats, so it doesn't matter. I would have ripped you if you said it was bad. So.
But it's mostly walks.
Let's not miss the most obvious thing. He missed all of last year with an injury, so we don't really
know what
to expect from Greg Bird coming back.
Yeah.
And even if he wasn't hurt for his sophomore season, just it was such a small sample size his rookie season, we wouldn't know much then either. I think he'll probably be a pretty good power hitting first baseman who walks more than at the average first baseman, and in a dynasty league. If I could lock him up for cheap, I think that would be an advisable idea. But since he presumably won't be an everyday player this year, and there may be some rust there, there's some uncertainty related to the performance. In the short term, I'd rather have Miller.
Okay. Next email from Alex P. Lelou. Dear Tim, Yvonne, and Jeff.
Hall of Fame class.
Yep.
Oh.
Would you consider? Come on, Chris. You're all about the Hall of Fame. You didn't even get that.
I thought it was Ivan.
Well,
Calderon.
I'm going to be honest. I wasn't listening.
Okay. Would you consider
Brandon Belt up in my rankings? Give me a break.
Would you consider drafting three quality first basemen in, say, the first five rounds in a roto league? It would be three of the following: Goldschmidt, Freddie Freeman, Miguel Cabrera, Edwin Encarnacion, Rizzo, or Votto. But realistically, you're talking like maybe Rizzo, Encarnacion, Freeman. You could do. And you would be filling first base, corner infield, and utility. What do you guys think?
No. It handcuffs you too much at the end of the draft. It's really nice to have that utility spot available late to grab whoever you think the best player is.
Yeah.
I think two I could get behind, sure. Especially this year. You've talked about it before, Adam, how the way first base breaks down. Like, there always seems to be somebody in a 12-team league who gets left out there, and that would make it so there's two somebodies getting left out, which is a good thing.
And you can get Goldschmidt and Anthony Rizzo or Goldschmidt and Votto. It's a pretty nice way to start your grid.
It is. And I also mentioned that the only two mixed league viable utility DH-only players this year are Kendrys Morales and Victor Martinez. Yep. It's not like there's a... It's not like there's going to be a situation where it's the eighth round and David Ortiz is still on the board and there's no place to play him. So I don't think handcuffing is as scary as it normally was. But three of your first five, I mean, there's a lot of middle infield depth, but unless you're forcing yourself to draft outfielders with those other two picks, I think you're going to regret it in the long run.
Last thing, a little personal story here. 2 years ago, I believe, we did our auction league roto draft, 12 teams mixed league, and I forgot that I had already bid like $34 out of $260 on Anthony Rizzo, I believe it was. So I bid on Edwin Encarnacion and got him for right around the same amount of money. And then I said, oh crap, I just filled corner infield. That was pretty stupid. But I did basically like use the equivalent of a first and second round pick on first baseman. I hated it at the time. It ended up being fine. I came in second that year to Scott.
Yeah, that was, you put up a great effort that year.
I've got a better one.
Oh, okay.
First year we instituted a keeper league in my big football league. I kept Drew Brees and then got to the draft, forgot about it, and took Aaron Rodgers with the first overall pick.
Do not drink and draft.
Oh, I know
my
that.
My drinking and drafting story is even better.
He doesn't believe
save
that.
Save that for another time.
Matt from DC says, Dear Trevor, Vlad, and Edgar.
Two people who belong in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, he's a DH. Oh, no, or he's a closer. Which one doesn't belong?
I'm not going to answer the question. That's
he doesn't want the closer.
It's a Rorschach test.
They all belong. All three of them are borderline guys.
They're all going in next year, right? Maybe not Edgar, but he'll definitely be in within the next two.
All right. Would you feel comfortable if a 16th round Dexter Fowler is your number two outfielder in a points league with Betts as your number one? And that is a hidden keeper question, apparently.
Yeah.
You would feel?
Oh, yeah. I've had worse outfields than that already drafting in a 12 team.
But we don't even know who his number three outfielder is. This is number two.
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, you could have a better outfield than that, but I don't think that's a bad outfield.
And you could take your actual number two outfielder with one of the preceding picks as well.
Yeah, and bump Fowler to third.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, right. Okay, great. How is Jorge Posada going to be left off the Hall of Fame ballot? I'm not a Yankees homer, and I can't see how he was getting so disrespected by the voters. If it's because of the 10-vote limit, that needs to be eliminated. No.
He wasn't that good.
Jorge Posada
was a very good player. Yeah. He should have gotten more
the Hall of
love,
very good.
But if we're going to complain about this, Jim Edmonds falling off the ballot in the first year is an absolute crime.
Well, Posada is not a Hall of Famer and did not deserve 10% of the vote, IMO. And Ryan in St. Louis, Dear Harry's Indochino and Blue Apron. Oh, what a dedicated listener. We are heading into our 11th season in a 15-team Roto Keeper League. I've never won. We only do 8 categories. No batting average and no strikeouts. When it comes to fewer categories, how does that affect who you draft? With you as my North Star, I know I will never be lost this season.
That pregnant pause has to make him feel good.
Yeah, right?
You don't pay attention to those two categories?
No batting average is a huge
I don't
difference.
Know that it would change my approach to pitchers that much, to be honest, because I think strikeouts are so closely tied to ERA and WHIP. Like, I'd still want big-time bat missers.
But it probably pushes some of those ground ball heavy guys a little higher. I don't know how many of them. A lot of them are coming off bad seasons. Like, I feel like Sonny Gray and Dallas Keuchel might benefit from this, but, you know, they're both coming off such bad seasons that it doesn't really help. Maybe Rick Porcello's a little more valuable.
Rick
Porcello, pitchers on good teams.
Marcus Stroman could possibly be a much more valuable player.
I would lower Danny Salazar.
Aaron Sanchez would be a more valuable piece.
I would think it'd probably push pitchers down as a whole because the main ways aces, I think, are distinguishing themselves from everybody else are strikeouts and innings. And since strikeouts aren't, actually those two being connected, high strikeout rate over a high number of innings leads to a high strikeout total. And obviously you don't necessarily care about that.
I will say it's weird that you got rid of a rate stat and a counting stat.
Yeah, I think that steals specialists become more valuable because now they're really helping you with 25% of the categories.
Yeah, and Billy Hamilton for sure becomes more valuable.
Like Billy Hamilton in this format where batting average doesn't count? Fourth round pick?
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, that's so. Okay.
Chris Carter was a monster last year too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Chris Davis.
Both of them.
I'm going to end the show on that. It's been fun. We have a lot more emails. Probably get to do kind of like a mailbag next week. But later this week, we'll do an early look at busts for 2017. Heath, Chris, Scott, see you later.
Adam.
Goodbye.